So today we're looking at Dhammapada verse 280, which reads as follows. Uttana kalam hi anuttahano yuva bali alasyang upeto sangsana sankappamano kusito panyaya magang alaso no vindati, which means in the time for effort, one is without effort, young and strong, one is endowed with idleness, such a lazy one has a mind of base inclinations. Being idle, they are unable to attain the path of wisdom. So this verse was taught in regards to one monk in particular, Padana Kamika Tissa. His name was Tissa. And he was a part of a large group of monks who came to Sawati and listened to the Buddha teach and were so incredibly impressed by the Buddha's teachings and felt that it resonated much with them. So this group of friends, all ordained under the Buddha, spent their time training, spent 5 years with the Buddha, with other teachers. And after that period of time, asked permission to go off and, well, didn't ask permission, but took their leave from the Buddha and went off to stay in the forest to practice meditation, practice what they had been taught. All of them except for one. Tissa, who was a part of this group, thought to himself, oh, if we go off into the forest, I'll lose the great comfort and luxury of living in a large monastery like Sawati. I'll lose good food and comfortable lodging and an easy living. It will be very difficult and unpleasant to live in the forest. And so he expressed his inclination not to go with them. All of the rest of them agreed together to go to support each other in their practice and spent a fair amount of time living in the forest, quite some distance from Sawati. And as a result of their practice, this is one time where it actually bore great fruit. Each and every one of them is said to have become an arahant as a result of their practice. And so, having learned amongst themselves that they all had become arahants, they agreed again to return to the Buddha. This was a common practice for those practicing the Buddha's teachings, that upon the attainment of the path and the fruition and enlightenment, they would go to sit with the Buddha and express to him the nature of their attainments, to out of respect for him, to bring to him the news of their enlightenment. And so, without further ado, they all began the trip back to Sawati. And as they came close to Sawati, they were approached by a certain householder who invited them for breakfast and for lunch, for food, and invited them to come the next day as well. He said, please come back tomorrow and accept food from me here. Still some distance from Sawati, but close enough that they said, certainly after we've met with the Buddha, they agreed to return and receive alms from this village where the layman lived. And having eaten then, They continued on their way, made their way back to Sawati, and went into the presence of the Buddha after paying respect, declared their attainment of Arahant, that they had all become free from all greed, all anger, and all delusion, that their practice had bore fruit, and they had come to the end of the spiritual life, done what needs to be done. Now, at that time, the other monk, the monk who didn't go with them, was in attendance and was greatly moved by the knowledge that he had missed his opportunity to practice with his fellows and attain the attainments along with them. The Buddha expressed his great appreciation and praise for these monks, expressing in various ways the acknowledgement and appreciation of their attainments and praising them for it. Tissa, the other monk, again, was moved by this, listening to the Buddha speak and acknowledging that he had missed this opportunity and that he had spent his time in idleness, it seemed, and was so moved that he decided that in order to not feel or not be seen as the lesser or inferior to these other monks, took it upon himself to exert himself most strenuously in the practice of the Buddha's teaching. And so that night, from that moment on, all through the night, he took up walking meditation, walking outside on the walking path, walking back and forth, trying to apply himself, trying to cultivate the qualities that would allow him to attain to the same knowledge and realization of as his fellow monks. But his exertion was based on greed. It was based on this need to attain something. And for those who are familiar with this sort of quality of mind, you can attest to the fact that it rarely brings great results. As a result of his practice, most likely his stress would have increased and his mindfulness would have decreased out of the obsession and the mind being consumed with greed, ego. As you try to make something happen, try to bring about enlightenment as a result of pushing yourself harder and harder. So he spent all night, and the result was that as he was walking back and forth in the pitch black of the night, before the dawn started to arise, he made a turn at the end of the walking path and tripped over a rock and broke his leg and fell down on the ground, rolling around, wailing and moaning and calling for help. And so, of course, he was in this large monastery and in the area with these other monks who had all come back and having attained the fruit of enlightenment. And so they were all alerted by his cries and came out of their kutis early in the morning before the sun had arisen and came to ask what was wrong and were told that he had broken his leg. And so they quickly set about to help him. So they went, some people gathering bandages or splint or whatever, others preparing a place and calling a doctor or whatever needed to be done. And so as they were taking their time caring for this monk, the sun arose, and their opportunity to go and fulfill their promise to receive alms from this village that was some distance from Sawati, the opportunity passed. They spent the morning taking care of this monk. Later on, they were in conversation with the Buddha, and the Buddha asked them whether they had gone as planned. They had asked permission of the Buddha or taken their leave, saying that having come back to pay respect to the Buddha, they were now going to head out again because in the morning because they had been invited for food. So the Buddha asked them whether they had actually gone, and they said to him, "No, venerable sir, we were not able to go. We were preoccupied with taking care of this monk who had broken his leg." And apparently, as the Buddha said, this wasn't the first time. He said, "Ah, well, you have been friends in the past as well. And in a past life," and he told the Jataka, "in a past life as well, this monk has caused you to lose your opportunity for succeeding in your affairs as well." In the past, the Jataka, it's a Jataka story that I won't go into, but it's about them when they were Brahmins, and this monk was lazy and ended up being late and gathering wet green wood because they'd all been sent out to get wood, and he was lazy. And then he had no wood to find, so he collected green wood, and they weren't able to light a fire as a result. And anyway, he basically ruined a big merit-making ceremony that these Brahmins had put together. But then the Buddha says this verse. He expresses this important teaching in regards to this behavior of tissa. How on the one hand, he doesn't take the opportunity, and then when the opportunity comes, he doesn't understand the true nature of effort and how to apply effort in a way that is truly beneficial and fruitful. And so as a result of his greed and his conceit, feeling inferior and worried about being inferior, worried about looking bad and so on, as a result, he ruined whatever opportunity he might have, needing to attain enlightenment by the end of the night or so on, practicing too hard. And so the Buddha taught this verse. Now the verse is solely concerned with the application of effort, but in the context of the story, it becomes interesting. It reminds us of something, again, very important about effort, that it's not something you can just force. Effort doesn't mean just pushing yourself. There are few lessons that we can get from the story that we don't get from the actual verse. The first is to be careful when practicing, especially walking meditation. A good reason why we instruct meditators not to walk with your eyes closed. Walking meditation done with your eyes closed can be dangerous, of course, just as walking in the middle of the night without any light. Not a very profound lesson, but something to remind ourselves of as well. Something that this story does make fairly clear. But more importantly, again, this idea of not confusing greed with effort or any kind of impulsion from any sort of defilement. That you can't force enlightenment. That practice is not proper just because you force yourself, push yourself. In other words, exert yourself beyond an ordinary objective exertion. People exert themselves out of greed, but they also exert themselves out of anger. And again, they exert themselves out of delusion, conceit, arrogance, ego. Out of greed, they might crave some kind of attainment, some kind of state of peace or happiness, and so they exert themselves out of some kind of desire for some state, some experience. It can be a conceptual idea, the idea of feeling like you want to be enlightened, you want to be this, want to be that, is bhava tanha, wanting to be something. I want to be an arahant, I want to be a sotapanna. I mean, it sounds good, in fact, it sounds wholesome, it sounds like a good idea, but the point is that there is greed in the mind. And when there is greed in the mind, your mind becomes clouded, and no matter what you claim to want, just wanting something doesn't make you any closer to attaining it, especially when it involves freedom from wanting. Becoming enlightened involves letting go. So the desire, the attraction is harmful rather than helpful. out of anger can be based on fear. Some people are afraid of dying without having become enlightened. And so the Buddha actually endorsed to some extent a sense of urgency based on this. And the Buddha himself was full of this sense of urgency as a bodhisattva before he became enlightened. Realizing that he too would have to get old, sick, and die, it spurred him on, caused him to exert himself to a greater extent, realizing that he might die without having freed himself and have to come back and repeat infinitely this cycle of birth, old age, sickness, and death. But fear is not wholesome. And so if you do it out of fear, in the case of this monk, he was afraid of being seen in this way or that way. Some people are afraid of again, dying before they become enlightened. And there's a real fear, I could die. But that fear doesn't serve you. That fear is harmful. And it can lead you to push yourself too hard, to think, if that's the case, then I should try to become enlightened as quickly as possible and make myself become enlightened. Based on that fear. Fear is irrational. Fear leads us to do things that are unmindful and harmful to ourselves and others. And of course, delusion. So out of conceit, wanting to be something, wanting to be superior, wanting to be great, wanting to be special. Wanting to be special is a real danger for people who take up spiritual practice of all kinds. Thinking of yourself as special, feeling that I am special, I should be able to become enlightened quickly, is actually going to make you become enlightened more slowly. Any kind of ego or conceit you have is only going to hinder your progress, of course, because enlightenment involves freedom from ego. And another more subtle ego is the control. You might have the best of intentions, but you still think, I will be mindful. I will make myself be mindful all the time, not realizing that this is not something that is under your control, that you can just switch on like a light. It's something that must, of course, be cultivated. It must be cultivated with patience and with the forbearance when things go wrong, because of course it's not a straight path. When you fail, to be patient and to be forgiving of yourself, allowing yourself to fail and to get back up again. And the third lesson the story gives us is a reminder of timeliness, that of taking an opportunity. Again, this came up with this monk in his mind on more than one occasion, realizing that he had missed the opportunity. It's a lesson for us to take every opportunity that we have to apply ourselves to the practice. A reminder that our opportunities are not unlimited, and that at times the door will be closed to us. We will lose an opportunity. We will lose supportive conditions. And that when these supportive conditions arise, our intention should not be to stall or to make excuses. We should remind ourselves of the uncertainty of life and to encourage ourselves to take every opportunity that we were given. When an opportunity comes up, we should think to ourselves, here, an opportunity has arisen. The response should be to take the opportunity. It can be not just opportunities to meditate. Often there are opportunities to be kind, to be generous, to help someone. Anytime you see someone who needs help, giving that help is taking the initiative. And this is a big part of what effort means in the Buddhist teaching. It's not about pushing yourself harder and harder, exerting yourself, tiring yourself, stressing yourself. It means taking the opportunity and never giving up. To at every moment that you have an opportunity to apply yourself and to take the opportunity. So the Buddha said, don't let the moment pass you by. Every moment that we have, that we can be mindful, is an opportunity. And we have a choice every moment to take this opportunity or to be lazy, to be idle, to let the moment slip by. And sometimes it happens that these moments no longer arise. Something arises that takes us so far out of our capacity to be mindful, that we no longer have the opportunity to cultivate the Buddha's teaching. So these are the sorts of lessons that we can gain from the story. For the verse, again, it focuses much more directly on the importance of effort, which is absolutely one of the cornerstones of the Buddha's teaching, but again, has much more to do with applying yourself consistently, methodically, patiently, unflaggingly, meaning without ever giving up. That when you fail, you get back up. You don't become discouraged or quit. Anytime you fail, it only means a lack of success, which has passed. You know, you didn't succeed. Well, a new opportunity to succeed has arisen. And in fact, there's never really a case where someone can fail in the Buddha's teaching. Since we have an eternity to succeed, the only thing that leads to failure is the lack of engagement. Anytime we apply ourselves to the Buddha's teaching, we're succeeding in training ourselves, in bringing ourselves further along the path, no matter how long or winding that path might be. So we can go through the verse. There's four parts to it. The first part relates just to effort and timeliness. The Buddha says, in the time of effort, the time for effort, one should not be effortless. So the criticism is in the time of effort, some people are effortless, are without effort. They don't put out effort. And it's true, there are times where you shouldn't or can't put out effort. When you're sick, the Buddha himself said, when you're sick, this isn't really a time for effort. When there's a famine, so a monk goes on alms round and doesn't get any food, also not really a time for effort. It's just not possible. Without a good amount of food, if you're not eating properly, you're just going to be weak and tired. And so the Buddha, for this reason, the Buddha didn't encourage fasting for those people who think that somehow there is some spiritual benefit in not eating whatsoever or just eating fruit juice or something like that. I've had students who try this and end up being so weak that they aren't able to complete the course. It's a serious problem. But when you're sick, when you're without food, there are certain instances. But a remarkable thing, of course, that we acknowledge with mindfulness is that almost every instance can still be an opportunity to cultivate the effort necessary to become enlightened. Even when you're lying on your deathbed, you have an opportunity to be mindful. So there are different levels of effort, and absolutely there's value in walking meditation, sitting meditation, exerting yourself physically to the extent of practicing many hours of walking, many hours of sitting, but it's not exertion, it's not aerobic exercise. It's not something where you have to push your body further and further. It's very simple and hopefully very comfortable activities in the sense of not having to exert yourself over much. This is why we can do with one meal a day or eating very little. But on the other hand, even when you're not able to do walking, not able to do sitting, even someone who is sick in bed or hasn't had sufficient nutrition or sufficient nourishment to give them the physical energy to walk and to sit, of course they're still able to be mindful. And this sort of points us in the direction of true effort. True effort is just the mind's inclination towards something rather than towards inertia. When the opportunity comes to do good or to do evil, exertion or effort is the effort you put into doing that. So a person who does evil deeds needs effort to do them. If they're too lazy, they won't accomplish much evil either, or they won't accomplish deeds that are exceedingly evil in terms of physical expression or verbal expression. If they just can't be bothered to kill or to steal or to lie or to cheat, well, then they'll be incapacitated. And likewise with good deeds. Yes, you can be mindful, but you need the inclination to even express the practice that will allow you to be mindful. So the cultivation of a mantra is a very common meditation practice, whether it's samatha or vipassana. When you apply yourself to that, that's of course absolutely sufficient and proper. That's right effort. There's no need to be forceful about your practice or try to control your mind. This is not right effort. Right effort is just the effort that you put into the consistent application of the mind. If you apply it, so if you apply yourself to being kind and generous, someone who applies themselves to charity or to volunteer work or that sort of thing, those are the kinds of efforts that come from exerting yourself strenuously and physically, but it's not the act of working hard that is important. Even in acts of charity, it's the inclination, it's the intention that you actually do the act of charity instead of saying, why bother, or having such clouded sort of delusion of mind that you don't even bother. You don't have the sense to think whether it's good, or you know that it's good, but you just let the moment slip by. It's not even that you make the determination in your mind, ah, I can't be bothered, or I don't want to do this good deed. Whether it's with charity, with ethics, or with meditation, the effort is your determination, and the very important essence of our practice is this effort that we make to actually do the practice. So when you say to yourself, I'm going to be generous, I'm going to keep the precepts, I'm not going to kill, I'm not going to, for instance, or when you say to yourself, I'm going to be mindful, when you make the inclination to be mindful and actually do it, that's effort. So in other words, the uttana kalamhi, in the time of in the time for effort, really refers to pretty much all times. There's always some sort of effort you can put out. But then the Buddha, in the second one, he does make mention of something that we have to acknowledge. He says, yuva bali, when one is young and strong, if one is endowed with idleness, this is a more sort of conventional concept of putting out effort, or a conventional idea of when is proper to put out effort, because the Buddha said on various occasions that his teaching is really for the young more than it is for the old. And absolutely, it's not to say that old people can't practice the Buddha's teaching. There's nothing like that. But it's a valuable, he expresses this because of the value in reminding young people of the opportunity that they have, and the acknowledgement that someone who has wasted their life in idleness has a very low capacity as they age, due to the accumulation of bad habits and the failing of their mental faculties as they get older, to apply themselves to the Buddha's teaching. Someone who is young and strong, yuva bali, is perfectly suited to apply themselves, and it's such a shame when they don't, when someone lets their life pass them by and they've already gotten old. And they've cultivated bad habits, and they're inclined in ways that prevent them from focusing their attention on the present moment of their experience, applying themselves to the Buddha's teaching. And the third line explains why this is a problem. Saṅsana saṅkappa mano kusito. Because a lazy one, again, as I've already mentioned, ends up with a mind full of bad habits, base inclinations, a mind that is caught up with greed, anger, and delusion as a result of the laziness. It's easy to fall into inertia, inaction, idleness, even maybe thinking that you're not harming anyone and you're not engaging in things that pollute your own mind, perhaps, and thinking that it's just doing nothing. Theoretically, doing nothing should be neutral. There shouldn't be any consequences. However, our minds are not, by their very nature, neutral. Our minds have negative inclinations in them that are very much supported by the cultivation of idleness and laziness. If we are inclined to laze around, to be idle, all of our defilements, our greed, our anger, our delusion, our bad habits have a great opportunity to grow. They're like fungus or mold that grow in the darkness. Mindfulness, effort, wisdom, these are things that shine light and cleanse the mind. Our minds are polluted and dark, and as a result of that, they give the capacity for the defilements to grow. Laziness, in fact, or idleness, in fact, is a product of the defilements, or it is made up of greed and anger and delusion. At its very essence, the reason why we let the opportunity to pass us by, when the opportunity to be kind or generous, when the opportunity to keep ethics or precepts arises, when the opportunity to meditate arises, our what leads us to let the moment pass us by is the defilements. What makes us lazy, if you ask, well, how do I overcome procrastination? How do I overcome laziness? You're really asking, how do I overcome the defilements? And so it's no surprise, or it should be no surprise, that engaging in idleness, engaging in laziness, just letting obvious opportunities for goodness, for greatness, for purity, for wisdom to arise, is absolutely the cultivation in and of itself of further defilement. So you're lazy out of greed, you're lazy out of anger or aversion, you're lazy out of delusion, out of a lack of clearly understanding what you're doing to yourself and what you're missing by not being fully present in your experience or fully aware and objective and objectively seeing and facing your experiences as they are. And what's wrong with that? Of course, there is an essential problem with allowing greed and anger and delusion to arise because it prevents you from seeing clearly. So the last line, Panyaya Magang Navinditi. Someone who is idle is not able to attain the path of wisdom. Now, the path of the Buddha is a path of wisdom. It's not, again, a path of heavy exertion or stubborn, repetitive practice. Just walking back and forth and sitting is not the practice of the Buddha. The practice is the path of wisdom. Wisdom which comes from seeing things clearly. It comes from seeing specifically the three characteristics, reasons for not clinging to things. When our ordinary inclination is to cling, to crave, to expect, to hope, and to wish, and to want things to be a certain way, to hold on to things that we like, and to have a negative attachment to things that we don't like, to be deluded and conceited. All of these are the bad inclinations that exist in the mind. Wisdom is quite simply that which allows us to free ourselves from the inclination to hold on to things, to see that nothing is worth clinging to because it's impermanent, unsatisfying, and uncontrollable. And the problem arises when, in the practice of meditation, we try to control that, try to bring about this sort of wisdom. We try to attain wisdom without proper application of effort. The attainment of wisdom requires consistent and sustained and patient effort in the sense of seeing the nature of reality repeatedly to the point where it resonates and it breaks through the cloud of delusion. Meaning to say, seeing impermanent suffering and non-self once, twice, 10 times, even 100 times is rarely enough, or anywhere near enough to lead one to become free from suffering. So the idea of effort is not to force or to bring about the arising of the three characteristics. It's about applying yourself repeatedly and systematically and patiently to see the three characteristics again and again, or more simply, just to look at things as they are and to see things as they are again and again and again until it resonates with you that none of these things that I'm seeing are worth clinging to, worth holding on to, worth craving. Not my thoughts, not my emotions, not my physical experiences, not the things around me, not my possessions, not the people I'm in contact with. None of it is worth clinging to. None of it is worth holding on to. This comes from simply seeing things as they are, on repeat. By seeing them again and again and again in this way, the mind changes its perspective from one of clinging to one of letting go. It becomes independent, not requiring things to be a certain way or not a certain way, and not trying to fix or control things, to keep things a certain way or to make them change. So in summary, there's a delicate balance that needs to be attained that is not really difficult. And it's only made difficult by lack of understanding of the nature of effort. So, of course, effort is something we have to impress upon ourselves and upon each other. We have to remind ourselves and each other to make effort in the sense of applying ourselves and applying ourselves repeatedly. But on the other hand, we have to constantly remember that we can't control this. We can't force it. We can't make it happen. We can't just decide one night, I'm going to become enlightened by morning and run back and forth on the walking path until we break our legs. It's not, the Buddha's Dhamma is akaliko. It means it has nothing to do with time. It's not something you can decide, it's going to happen now, it's going to happen now. It's something that you apply yourself to in the present moment, and preferably do not fixate on the results. Preferably, you focus on the quality of your experience. Our reason for practicing should not be what we're going to get out of it, simply because that involves greed, it involves expectation, it involves a concern with the future. What drives us in the practice should be the quality that it brings to our mind in the present moment. We should be content with the goodness that we can see here and now through the application of mindfulness. And we should be content with the fact that it's changing us, that it's positive, it's beneficial to us by its very nature, by its very quality, without applying ourselves to the idea of when it might bring fruit or when it might lead to some goal that we have of becoming enlightened or becoming a spiritually accomplished individual. Our effort should be every moment. Effort should be the application that we take in every moment in our practice as a result of practicing walking meditation, practicing sitting meditation. We're given the opportunity to apply ourselves at every moment. When the stomach rises, the knowledge of it rising and the acknowledgement of it as being just that, not good, not bad, not me, not mine, not worth clinging to, just rising, and then the stomach falling. So that in and of itself is effort. There's nothing more that needs to be done. There's no extra effort that you have to apply in your practice. The effort is simply that very challenging act of applying ourselves at every moment, which of course is only something that can be accomplished through great training and consistent training over generally a long period of time. So in and of itself is a very difficult thing, but not difficult in the same way as it's difficult to push yourself harder and harder and harder trying to accomplish something in a given period of time or so on. This allows us, I mean, the value of this is that it gives us a freedom from stress, a freedom from any kind of deadline that we might impose upon ourselves, because you can't apply such a deadline. It doesn't work, it doesn't help, it is detrimental to your practice. Our practice should be here and now, focused only on this moment without concern for what it might bring in the future. If we are focused on the present without emphasis on the past or the future, only then we can see things as they are, and consistently and methodically and repetitively seeing things just as they are is what gives rise to true wisdom. So this is the lesson, I think, that comes from effort. It's an important conversation. It's an important topic for this reason, because absolutely it's a common thing, perhaps not to break one's leg, but to overexert oneself thinking that this is effort, when in fact effort is simply this very simple act of applying yourself repeatedly, without flagging, without giving up, and applying yourself to the qualities of flagging and giving up, to apply yourself to the qualities that are associated with laziness and apply effort to them as well. This is true effort. When you are lazy, to take the laziness as an object, whatever it might be, whether it's greed, you just enjoy being lazy, whether it be anger, you're averse to putting out effort, you're averse to the pain and the stress of having to sit still, having to pay attention, or delusion, whether it's just you're confused or you're unsure or you're worried or anything like that, doubt, all of these sorts of things that prevent you from applying yourself diligently and enthusiastically to the practice of mindfulness in the present moment. So that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you for listening.